This week on Out of the Air features Region author journalist Mark Taylor reflecting on his press roots and his new book, Hospital, Heal Thyself. Next, we have independent film actor, screenwriter, and producer Derek McMahon, whose work on numerous projects can be seen throughout the Midwest. Our spotlight's on Duneland Photography Club's February 2025 exhibit at the Art Barn.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight. Been with us before. In fact, we were just discussing one of our first interviews back when we were doing it in the studio at, live at WVLP. Steve Bensing is back here, and he's the president of the Duneland Photography Club. He's going to tell us about, well, maybe update us on a few things they have been doing, and then they have an upcoming exhibit in 2025, and tell us all about that and some of the things, and maybe even just information about the club itself. Steve, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm so glad that see both you and Esther here. It's really nice to speak to you again. It seems like it's been a long time, but you know, a lot of things have happened between the last times that we've talked.
Yeah, we've had you on since that first interview early in the year, but it's probably been about a year and a half, or maybe even a little longer than that.
Well, actually, Steve, could you start maybe with describing your club, the activities, where you meet, how often you meet? Just give us some background on this fabulous group.
I'd be happy to do that, Esther. The Duneland Photography Club has been around for a little while. We currently meet at the Sunset Hill Farm County Park, north of Valparaiso. And we meet in the what we like to call the grain bin, but it's a big round metal building, the Horton Family Education Center. It's a big enough place for us to fit. We have currently about 100 members. Now, normally we're not all there at the same time, but we have monthly meetings the first Tuesday of each month. We're meeting at 6 o'clock, although we come in early. We have mentoring time, and we have some mentors that are available to help people with their photography questions and teach them on an individual basis.
I know I was privileged to talk to your group one time, mostly about how to set things up for an exhibit, not so much about the photography itself, but I know a lot of you have a range of experience in your membership, a lot of people that are very experienced, and that's what the mentorship comes in, and I observe that part. But you know, and a lot of the people, you came to me to say, well, maybe talk to them about how they can get their work out to exhibit, how to prepare it, how to do everything. So yeah, I remember that. Very, very active group. Well, speaking of the activities, what are some of the things you've been doing, like this past November and even to December? I know you do a lot of things during that before we get into what's coming up.
So first of all, some of the things that we have been doing, in November, we did headshots for the Memorial Opera House. In December, they had they put on Scrooge. And so we did headshots for that. And then we went out to the Jasper Pulaski Fish and Wildlife area and did some photography of the sandhill cranes. In December, of course, we also have our annual Christmas party, and it's a lot of fun where we have food, and of course we have photography related things, and we have games. And so it was really a great time for that. You know, as we get to into the colder months, we like to take pictures of, for example, the holiday lights that are going on at different places. So we've done some of that. And in early January, we have those kind of things going on, as well as at our January meeting, we had Christina Kanowski from Ancillary, which is her frame shop, which is located in Chesterton now. So she kind of goes back to what Larry was talking about earlier, getting ready for an exhibit, and her focus is on framing. So right. we like to get ready for those things. So those are some of the things that we've done recently.
So now tell us a little about, you have an exhibit coming up in February 2025, and tell us about the exhibit, but also maybe also touch, and I'm going to tag a question under my other one first. Tell us first of all how to become a member of the club, what the requirements are, if there are any other dues and things, but then tell us about this exhibit that's coming up also.
Okay, well, first of all, as far as becoming a member of the club, you can show up at one of our meetings. The first meeting is free. Membership is only $15 a year, so that's really a pretty good deal. If you're interested in photography, come on out. It is geared for adults, although we've had some younger people, like teenagers, come with their parents as under a family membership, which is $20 a year. So families can, it's actually a pretty good deal for that too. So we have a variety of people that join, whether they're experienced photographers. We've gotten some new people this past year that were very experienced, but we also got some new people that they just barely knew anything about taking pictures. So we've had the variety of things.
So Steve, with this title of Winter Wonders, is it, are we going to see mostly snowy landscapes, or, but Winter Wonders says so much more to me than wintry landscapes. So can you?
Well, yes, I think you will see some of that, but also we like to use the creative thinking in that process. So good. There are many things that can be even remotely related to winter or a little bit related to winter. Think about indoor activities. Think about things that go on with family. So there are lots of those kind of things as well.
Excellent.
Well, you know, in our final minute, tell us a little bit more about when and where on the exhibit, how people can see it and where it's going to be, and of course your website.
Okay. So first of all, our website is doodlingphotographyclub.org. We also have a Facebook page, and we have, which if you look up Doodling Photography Club on Facebook, you'll find us. So the information is out there. But as far as this exhibit, it will be for February 4 through 27th. We will have a reception on February 15th, which is a Saturday from 1 to 3.
Well, we'd like to thank you for coming on. That's Steve Bensing, president of the Doodling Photography Club Art Barn exhibit. It'll be Winter Wonder, February 4th through 27th, reception on February 15th. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your activities with the Doodling Photography Club.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's great seeing you.
And a quick spotlight extra. And real quick, in our last moments here, tell us show name, dates, times, and location.
So the show is Rules for Living. It's going to be starting February 14th and running until March 3rd. And it's going to be at Chicago Street Theater, and you can get tickets there.
Okay, and that's chicagostreet.org, and you can email them at boxoffice@chicagostreet.org. And that's Allison Granite. She's directing Rules for Living there. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Art in the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
This is author Christopher Grayson, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Mark Taylor to Art on the Air. Mark is a veteran healthcare journalist who has covered health and medicine for newspapers and business publications for decades. He started at the Post Tribune in 1993 and spent almost 10 years covering health and business for Crain's Chicago. He is the recipient of Kaiser & Knight Fellowships and is the co-founder of the Association of Healthcare Journalists. He has authored a book titled Hospital Heal Thyself, One Brilliant Mathematician's Proven Plan for Saving Hospitals, Many Lives, and Billions of Dollars. It is a book about Harvard professor Dr. Eugene Lickveck. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Mark. It's very nice meeting you, and I really, really, really enjoyed the book.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, Mark, it's a reacquaintance with us. We go back quite a few years, and we'll talk about that story in a little bit, too, about how we first met. As a Post-Tribune, you were covering when I was a director of the high school shows for Highland and for the Highland Theater Company, and you came in to cover what the typical high school show was and everything, and we'll talk a little bit about how fun that was. But what we really want to start off with is your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Mark.
It's been a long, rocky road, Larry. I was born in Gary, raised in the Hessville neighborhood of Hammond. I went to Morton High School. But even earlier, before high school, I was always interested in writing. And I can trace that back to being the oldest of five boys. And we had big family dinners, and there was almost a competition because my mom was such a good cook. She would bring the food, the entree, in a big platter and set it on the table, and then immediately withdrew before she got fork marks on her hands. And you had to be quick, and you ate fast. If you wanted to have seconds, you had to eat really fast. And I got really good at eating fast. It took me many years to overcome that bad habit. But one time we're sitting down at the table, and my mom looked at me, and I think I must have smiled or something guiltily, and she slapped me. And it was an injustice because I hadn't done anything. And out of my mouth, and everyone at the family was eating mouth and food and everything, and this poem came out. I remember it, I don't know, 55 years later. When I was young, I took the blame. My mommy slapped me just the same. When I had aged, I took the rap. She came across with another slap. But then I found an answer to my problem fit. Blame someone else for what I do and then let them get hit. And food was coming out of their mouth, milk out of their nose. The reaction was, it was completely spontaneous. I didn't know where or how the words came from. As you can tell, it's not exactly up there with Whitman in terms of poetry. But it was the first time I really experienced the power of words. And after that, I decided, I think I want to be a writer. Now, I imagined I was going to be a novelist, but I've never published a novel. I did publish a few short stories over the years, fictional stories. But I dated a girl in college at Purdue Calumet who had graduated from journalism school at Syracuse and was working, oddly enough, for the old WLNR in Lansing as a news person. And she said, you ought to go into journalism. You can work on your writing and your craft there. And I ended up going to Indiana University and studying journalism. And when I came back, very stupidly, I realized that one needs to know how to type in order to be a professional journalist. Now, a lot of people might have gotten that little hint sooner, but when I was in college, I'm a pretty good cook because of my mom, and I lived in apartments because I didn't start college till I was at IU, till I was 21, so I never lived in a dorm. And women in my class, I would make deals with them. If you type my term paper, I will cook you dinner. And so if they lived in a dorm, they were eating lousy food. They had a good meal out of it. I got my papers typed. So I was able to pull this ridiculous scheme off throughout my college years at IU. And then finally, I go to the Hammond Times. They say, hey, we like your writing from the Indiana Daily Student. We think you've got talent. All you have to do now is take the typing test. And I said, what? I somehow was under the impression that, like in the front page, reporters had secretaries. And I realized somehow, very stupidly, I will concede, that I didn't know this, and it cost me a job because they said, look, I'm sorry. You really either need to learn to take a typing class or find another profession. And I took a typing class over at what used to be Hammond Tech, Hammond Adult Education. And in the meantime, I found other professions. So I worked at Pullman Standard in Hammond. And then in Chicago, I became their head of publications. I worked for a couple hospitals on the north side in publications and public relations. I was a steel worker, a taxi driver. I sold wine. I opened up the restaurant on Michigan Avenue, the Neiman Marcus restaurant, and I was a waiter there. And I didn't get into journalism until my wife and I, we'd been living together in Minnesota, moved back. And she said, you should get a job in journalism. 10 years later, after I blew my typing test, I finally got a job in journalism.
Wow, what a journey. And so your first job in journalism was the Post Tribune?
Well, yes, my first regular job. I mean, I had freelance stories for the Reader and for Northwest Indiana papers. But yeah, the Post Tribune first hired me as a correspondent, and then I got a full-time job. It's kind of crazy. My wife, I married above my station. I think you met my wife, Marcia. She's much smarter and more attractive and accomplished and confident than I am. But she's been very supportive. And we were living in Rome, Italy, because she was smart enough to get a Fulbright there. And I moved over there with her. And at this point, I had a job offer from the Post Tribune, but it was tentative. So I got over there and they said, okay, while I was over there, they said, we're gonna offer you a staff writer job. And of course, you want the security and you know, the insurance and everything else. So I started freelancing for the AP and some other publications, and a guy who apparently had read my pieces called me one day to talk to me about a job. And he was not just the Rome bureau chief, but back then the Rome bureau covered most of Europe and even part of the Middle East for a budding new TV network called CNN. Uh-huh. He seriously didn't offer me a job, but said, look, you got to go through the process. So as far as I'm concerned, you're my man, but somebody from Atlanta is going to have to come. They came and everything was good. And then they were waiting for one other person's okay from Atlanta. And I came in on a Monday morning expecting I'm going to get a job offer. And the guy who was going to hire me had to go to Lebanon because the Archbishop of Canterbury's emissary, Terry Wade, had been kidnapped by terrorists in Lebanon. And he was there for months. And his secretary said, here's an envelope for you. And he showed it to me. He says, Mark, I think there's a great chance you're going to be hired, but I can't make you the offer now. And the Post Tribune said, hey, this job's not going to last here waiting for you forever. So I went back to the United States early. My wife and stepson stayed in Rome. And I came back to the region and worked for the Post Tribune Instead, just imagine looking at me. I could have been Wolf Blitzer.
There you go. Well, yeah, you can do. Well, I just want to briefly, before we get on to the real subject of this, about our first meeting and that you were on a project for the Post Tribune. And so tell us a little bit about that. And there was a little bit of drama that went with that. Of course, in theater, there's always a little bit of drama.
Well, my memory of this is a little rusty, but I recall nearly at the last minute, one of the leads of this show left it, right?
They got suspended from school. You were covering us for like six weeks as a feature about the typical high school musical. And so you would come in and watch rehearsals and everything. And the week of the show that was going to open, our lead got suspended for something. And so we had to scramble to cover that. But you were there on at the closing of our show. You were there when we had our closing night, I call it the company party, you know, with everybody. And the lead that got kicked out of the show came there and apologized for his missteps. So that was the whole thing.
There was a lot of drama in that, I recall. I was thinking at first, okay, there are 50 ways I could screw this up, and the worst one would be to make it boring. And it was never boring. Yeah. It was all these young aspiring actors and you and the production crews and everything. It was so coordinated. I was in theater when I was in high school, and I'd only seen a small part of that. Seeing it from your perspective was really, really interesting.
Well, and you definitely covered that incident, you know, in your writing. It was I know it was a delicate thing to cover, but everything. And then a few years later, we had another crossing of some daughter of yours was involved with theater company.
Different school, but yeah, you were at Munster High School, and my daughter Katie, who was smitten by the theater bug at an early age. I remember I got a fellowship, a Kaiser fellowship, and I went back to Indiana University in 1996-97 and took my family. And my daughter signed up for a all-female production around Christmas time of Tiny Tim, A Christmas Carol, but she was Tiny Tina, and all the roles were played by women in this, including Scrooge. And she got a cold, like a bad cold, the day before the show, and we were so concerned, and she was going, "Man, but I have to go on." And I didn't even recognize her voice. And I'll tell you, it was amazing, because she went out on that stage and somehow she just put that cold in her back pocket and performed her heart out. And she got, it was a small role, but she got a write up in the local paper for her tenacity and skill. I think she was maybe 7.
Right. Well, and then the lead that she did for us was Once Upon a Mattress. So that was
right.
Yeah. So
I want to ask you, just I'm personally curious, what were the themes of the articles in the Reader when you were writing?
I was living in Chicago for about 5 years in the early 1980s, late 70s, early 80s. And periodically, they were just small things about Chicago life. I didn't have any luck getting short stories published there, but just things that are going on in the neighborhood and that. I was trying to find my way back to being a writer and not succeeding very well.
So how did health and medicine become your particular field?
Well, it was funny. At first, I thought it was a punishment. I'd been covering. I started with the Post Tribune as an entertainment writer, so it was great. I got to see any concerts I wanted as long as I would review them or interview the artists. So I got the last interview with Roy Orbison before he died, and that was just wonderful. And he was one of my heroes, and B.B. King and Ringo Starr and all kinds of great international and national artists. Actors, authors, even politicians. I interviewed Bill Clinton when he was running for president the first time, and later on Dan Quayle, and it was pretty cool. So I did that. Then I became the crime reporter, which Gary in the late 1980s, early 90s was suffering really badly. Kind of they were at one time the murder, arson and car theft capital of America. And it was really tragic. But if you're a crime writer, that's very fertile field. And so I thought I was pretty good at it and I was enjoying it. And then I think I might have gotten assigned to cover local government. And because at one time I was the president of the union and I was active in the Newspaper Guild Union, we had an editor come in who, let's say, vowed to break the union. And she somehow got caught because she left papers on the copy machine that detailed her plan to break the union. And one of our members apparently got a hold of it, took it to the publisher, and she was gone by the next day. And they came up to me and they said, okay, things are going to be different. You know, you're going to get a new assignment. And the Clinton health reform bill was sort of making its way through Congress at the time. It ultimately failed to pass. But everybody thought, well, we need to know more about this. And so they assigned me to it. And I knew nothing about it. I had no background in it. It was pathetic how little I knew. But I didn't want to be shown up. And it turned out it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I dove in head first. My wife would tell me, you know, you used to, when we'd come to bed, before you go to sleep, you'd read novels and interesting biographies. And now you've got a copy of My Prostate and Me and weekly mortality and morbidity reports for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. You know, you become boring. I go, I got to understand this. And it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me. I got a Kaiser Fellowship, so I was able to take a year off from the daily grind of working at the Post Tribune and study our national healthcare system. I could do it anywhere. So we went down to Indiana University and I became a visiting scholar there. I did some mentoring, a little bit of lecturing, and I ended up starting a small conference at Indiana University for healthcare journalists that grew into what became the Association of Healthcare Journalists, the largest professional and educational association of people who are covering healthcare, whether that's technology, medicine, pharmaceuticals, healthcare policy, healthcare delivery, whatever. And it's been maybe the most satisfying thing I've ever done outside of have a family.
Wow. And so when did you begin Hospital Heal Thyself?
Oh, like, about 7 years ago, after I'd done three or four stories on the subject of my book, Eugene Litvak. I'd written these for, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Chicago Tribune, other newspapers and healthcare business publications. And about 7 years ago, I mean, the studies about him and his work were appearing in the best healthcare journals in the country. And he was advising some of the best hospitals in the country and in the world. And it was kind of remarkable. And I was surprised it wasn't getting more press. Right. So he and I discussed it and we said, I think there's a book here. And it would take a whole other session to talk about his life, which is a fascinating life. In the former Soviet Union, he was internationally known as an applied mathematician. He published a paper with a Nobel Prize winner. His research was being published around the world, yet they wouldn't let him leave the country because he was a Jew. And because he was a Jew, his career prospects were limited. His educational prospects were limited. Even in some sense, his housing was limited. And And he got invited by Claude Shannon, the father of information theory, who worked with Alan Turing on the Enigma project during World War II. This guy's like kind of one of the fathers of computers. And Litvak wanted to come for this conference that he was invited to, and they said no. And he said, well, all right, my wife and I are going to apply for permission to leave. And he and his wife immediately lost their jobs for 10 years. They were persecuted by the secret police, threatened with jail, phones tapped, they were wired, followed. And the KGB even attempted to recruit him. I said, look, we will send you to America if you want to go see Claude Shannon, but you must tell us what other mathematicians and scientists are doing. We'll send you around the world and you tell us, just talk with us about what they are doing. And he delicately refused it and eventually came to the United States 10 years later. So that's kind of, I haven't even gotten into what the book is about, but it's a little bit about him and a lot about how his methods, applying math. He has no background in healthcare at all. He's not a physician, not a nurse, not a hospital executive. Yet he managed to discover the cause of something that has vexed hospitals for decades, why hospitals are overcrowded sometimes 2 or 3 days a week. And he also found the solution to that. And it's being applied around the world, but it needs to be applied much more in the United States.
Yeah, we have such a patchwork of a healthcare system and everything. And yeah, you're right. The book really explores his not only personal past, but you brought to light how mathematics really can improve the flow of hospitals in and out and everything like that. Well, in our last moments here, Mark, this has been a fantastic story about your own background, but tell us where we can find the book and how people can reach out to you and social media and everything like that.
Well, it's available on Amazon.com. My publisher is John Wiley and Sons. So if you go to johnwileyandsons.com. You can search for a Hospital Heal Thyself and get it there. It's at the Barnes & Noble in Schererville, Indiana, the new one, and the Barnes & Noble in Valparaiso, Indiana. And on February 1st from 1 to 3 p.m., I will be doing a signing, and I think at 2 o'clock I'll be doing a reading from the book. So, all of you. Barnes & Noble in Valparaiso.
Valparaiso, okay.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you coming on. It's great to reacquainted with you and hook up after all these years with our cast. And the book is Hospital Heal Thyself. It's a wonderful read. Mark Taylor, the author, you can contact him through his Facebook page and see him at the thing. Mark, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your not only your personal journey, but about your new book.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Art of the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners. Email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Did you know that you can also listen to Art in the Air anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. We'd like to thank you for listening to Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you.
This is Frank Ferrante's friend, Groucho Marx, and you're listening to Art on the Air. on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM. You bet your life. And tell them Groucho sent you.
We would like to welcome Derek McMahon to Art on the Air. While having a degree in physical therapy, Derek found acting to be a consistent passion. Appearing in independent films, he is also working on his own project and a screenplay, plus is the producer on an independent movie titled The Emerald Forest, and it will be shown in L.A. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Derek. It's very nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you, Esther, and Larry. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm excited to talk to you guys.
We are as well.
Really glad to have you on. And, you know, our audience likes to hear their origin story. I always like to put it like how you got from where you were, and I guess it starts in La Porte, to where you are now. So tell us all about Derek.
Oh, goodness. So, yeah, I was born in La Porte, Indiana, and I went to New Prairie High School. And, you know, people ask, like, oh, you must have been into the arts all the time. And I think really growing up, I tell people, a country boy in Indiana, it always felt like getting into the movies, and just it seemed some foreign dream that was just way out there. And I, even though I got into choir in high school, I really didn't audition till for my first play until after college, really. I always had the dream inside there of performing, but yeah, just it always seemed like some otherworldly thing to do and achieve.
So, but in your household, did you develop sort of skits and plays? What was family life like? And was this dream supported at all in the family? Did you even share that dream?
Yeah, I have memories. And I'm doing this interview from my family home, and but growing up playing out in the woods, lots of expansive woods, just kind of making our own. My brother Garrett, who's also a really creative force. Boy, I'm getting choked up thinking about family here. But my brother Garrett just playing in the woods, and we would just reenact Indiana Jones, you know, playing out in the woods, or Star Wars, or, you know, we had our own Endor forest out there in the woods. And so it was really just sticks and
it's total freedom,
using your imagination. And and that's so we kind of did our own reenactments out, my brother and I, out playing in the woods.
I think that sounds lovely.
So in high school, you said that's the first experience you had in shows. So tell us about some of those experiences, what your first show was, if there was any roles, any favorite roles in shows.
And really in high school, I was in sports some. I graduated with the Indiana State Honors Diploma. And I'm like, well, some of that was, well, you needed to have some more art curriculum. So I got into choir, and there was some just getting on stage, and granted it was an ensemble performance, and just like, I really like that, doing different choir performances. So it was much different than solo on screen, but really the first truly acting work, because it still felt like I don't know. How do I pursue this as a, you know, country boy from Indiana? So it was just kind of that was the first just little taste of being in front of people. And but I would say just some of my classes with public speaking classes that some people were terrified of, I loved. I mean, it was just getting up in front of people and giving a presentation. And I do remember that feeling of just being in front of people and telling them about you know, whatever school presentation, but I took that. I remember that enjoyment, and I think I, you know, continued to take that forward with this real dream that was not realized whatsoever at that time.
So during high school, Derek, did you develop writing then? Did you enjoy writing? Did you enjoy telling stories? I'm just kind of...
And yeah, and I really enjoyed the writing, creative writing classes in high school. And again, I do distinctly remember that, Esther, but it was just something I enjoyed, but like, where can I keep harping back on like this, well, I really enjoy this, but what do I do with this?
Well, but you know, like sometimes, yeah, and, you know, sometimes the things that we love, we don't know where it's going to eventually take us. And yeah. So, but as you're writing, your English teachers would have to be reading. And did anybody encourage you? Did you share your writing with your family?
Sorry, the pause. I paused because my mom has recently passed away.
Our condolences. It's so difficult.
So mom was always a really big supporter. I do remember in high school, it was just a couple of years ago. Mr. Suter, the English teacher that I just remember that just always super encouraging, just always the super encouragement and kind of planting some of those just initial seeds of encouragement. And I think that's important for anyone growing up. I mean, I'm revisiting these dreams a little later in life. I think that's important for kids just to like, wow, this could be just a reality. I guess I didn't see the entire pathway, but I enjoyed the things I was doing at the moment in Mr. Suter's class and with my mom's encouragement.
I know. Well, I think you'll find that generally that happens a lot. People have these massive careers and then they take up the arts or they develop a love for painting or ceramics. So I don't, you know, everything in its right time.
Well, which brings me to you did pursue a degree after graduation. And I think it's what your, we'll call it your career that pays the bills is physical therapy. So tell us about that. And then I know the journey you went to Indiana University, but then we'll see how that matriculated to your first audition. But tell us a little bit about the physical therapy journey.
Yeah, I just always interested in the human body, and I work out all the time still. And don't get me wrong, I love what I do. I've been how many years now, people? So in the spring it will be 23 years out and practicing as a therapist. And I love what I'm doing, but I think folks can have more than one dream inside there. And back in college, I got approached not so much in the acting realm, but actually doing some modeling work back in the day, some fine art modeling work. And I guess it's still an expressive form of, I mean, it was, I don't know who has my prints nowadays, but you know, the prints that were sold in gallery exhibits and stuff, and like taking my mom and my aunt to some of those shows, and just, it was beautifully, tastefully done. I'm like, wow, that's me. And, and so it was just kind of, again, not, you know, acting in front of the camera, but just, so it was some of that I did move out to, LA shortly after finishing college I'm getting some little nuggets of success of just, with that work. And shortly after college, I, you know, had my physical therapy degree and I moved out to LA for a while.
So what then took you to your first audition? I mean, I think your first real audition was the Chicago Street Theater. So, but tell us about that experience, the role, the show.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to remember the triggering moment or memory that took me to that. So it was the Chicago Street Theater. I guess, okay, I had my degree. I had, I still had things I wanted. I'm just, I hit a thing of like, why am I doing this? And I read about this audition at Chicago Street Theater. It was the show, Balm and Gilead was the name of the show. And they just had open audition, a number of parts, and they gave you some sides, and you're just, here you go, you're up on stage. I'm like, oh, okay, here I go. And I read, and just the feeling of, I just felt good that I did it, that I went and auditioned, and super nervous, but I got a phone call from my director, my first director, Johnny Para. So she reached out and cast me as, so my first role was playing David, which was actually playing, and I loved it. It was playing a character that I could get into. It was playing, I played a gay character on stage. So Mom got to come see me in full. I was a pretty hot chick back then. I was clean shaven, long blonde hair, tight black dress. And so it was, I'm a pretty built guy. So you see this built guy come out in a deeper voice and with a, so yep, Mom, this is what I'm doing. And but Mom, God love her, she cheered me on, and Mom supported everything from doing that to doing did a few runs of the Rocky Horror Picture Show out at the Dunes theater close to the beach here, and I'm sure you two are familiar with that show. But you know, I got the part of Rocky, and that was really my first musical. I mean, I don't consider myself, you know, I am no Hugh Jackman, like, but as far, I mean, his musical prowess as well. But Mom came to support that, and the Rocky character, if you've seen the movie, you know, he's
very flamboyant,
right?
Flamboyant, white tidies, and Kevin Lee Geist put me in. He's like, hey, would you wear this on stage? And it was a flamboyant show, but it was still white underwear in the form of a G-string on stage. Right. And I mean, it was a raunchy Rocky Horror Picture Show, but my mom, God love her, we needed people to help with makeup before the show. She's dressing, she's in makeup, helping do makeup for all these drag queens, et cetera, everybody in the makeup backstage. So it was a, Mom just had a blast hanging out, watching every show. So, hey, like I told you, I can get talking for a while. So
well, that's what we like. We like to hear about the, you know, the origin story and how it's developed.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP 103.1 FM.
And then after doing Rocky as a Frankenfurter for a while, tell us about how acting now became part of your life.
I continued getting more, from whether it was at Dunes Theater or Chicago Street Theater, I just look, okay, what's the next show? Okay, I'll audition for that. I got a part, and it was more of a Matrix type feel of Julius Caesar. And actually that show won a whole bunch of just state competitions, best, I mean, it was like a Lord of the Rings run of but it's not really, I mean, that's nice, but just, I remember the memories of just being in rehearsal and being with, I call it my, you know, now I call it my film family, but my theater family. But I started like, it builds confidence. And so after some time, I'm just like, you know, I'm going to move to LA. Oh no. Well, I knew one person out there, my dear friend, David Dumontier. Goodness gracious, people passing away from, David is no longer here. He also passed away from cancer on the 4th of July this year. But my friend David, I met at a movie audition in Chicago. We just exchanged numbers. He was moving out soon. I'm like, hey, I'm moving to LA. I just happened to pick an apartment just across the street from his. I'm like, well, I'm gonna get this one next door to you. And looking, I love my times in LA. Shot, boy, it's out there. I should put a link of it into my Instagram. But it's called Neighbors. It's this little independent pilot that we'd submitted for back in the day. Like, it's more so of a thing back then, but pilot season. But it's out there on, you can find it. But it's just a silly, humorous thing.
Can you talk about the Emerald Forest? What time period is that in? Is that more current?
Yeah, my dear friend Darren Lee Cupp is taking the reins on that. It's set in the world of Wizard of Oz, and so there's been there is a teaser trailer out there right now. So it's in the process of pre-production right now. So I don't know for sure that the filming dates. I know we are looking at trying to shoot some interiors in studio shots out there, but I mean, we've been doing scouting as far as to have some exteriors of, I mean, I've been seeing pictures from Darren, different castles in Romania and other areas. But, so that's still in some pre-production. I don't know exactly when we're going to get full rolling, but I'm super excited to work with Darren and a lot of talented cast in that.
Is there going to be any Midwest filming?
We are actually in pre-production for another film with my dear friend Leanne Johnson, who I was just in with one of my films, Extraction USA, that's out on some of the major streamers. And sorry if I would be remiss if I didn't give a little plug to that. You can find that. It's actually now out for free on Tubi with commercials, Extraction USA. I'm super proud of that film. Filmed right here in the Midwest in Indiana. Leanne and I call her my tag team film partner, and she reached out to me for Extraction. Just, I didn't even know about it. It's like, hey, I have a part in mind for you, and yeah, and Leanne is doing amazing things, and so I mean, I was just like, yes, yes, I'm all yours. I will, whatever you want. And but I'm so, I tell her all the time that I'm so thankful for her reaching out. So for that project, it's, you know, it's an independent production. And what we were able to do with that budget, I'm super proud of. They might be shocked when they, so just warning. So I play a very, so no potty language on this podcast, but a very mean, a very mean bar owner. So, and I'm not particularly nice to Leanne in this. So she also chose me because she told me she could trust me. And so there's, I'm not a nice, so I guess fun in the sense of playing, just playing an a-hole. And
well, on the other side, one of the role, and I know we only have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to touch on when you were called in America's Prayer, shot near Louisville, and you played a Jesus character. And there's a story, I think, in our notes that we have of how after you did something, some of the cast came up to you. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. Shot that in Louisville. And I didn't even know about this production either. They reached out to me for that production purely just from my headshot on Instagram, because if you see me out there, I guess I kind of look like stereotypical Jesus a little bit. So we had a lot of extras on a day in filming. I'm all dressed in white garb, and we would, you know, cut for the scene, and they'd have to do a camera reset, and I would just have a line of the extras coming up to me in tears and thank you. I just hugged everybody and said, you know, I said, no, thank you. You know, thank you. And we were just a line of people in tears coming to tell me, thank you. I'm like, I just hugged them back and said, no, thank you. And, for, you know, they like for them that day, if it helped them with their belief, I just gave hugs back, and it was a very touching day for sure.
In our last moments, I want to give you the opportunity to tell people how they can find out about you online, contact you. Maybe someone wants to reach out to cast you and things like that, Derek.
Yeah, easiest way. Some people have some weird handles out there, all kinds of numbers and stuff, but it's just Derek.McMahon on Instagram. Same thing on Facebook. You could message me directly on there. So I try to get caught up with posting. With there's a number of projects I got to get. You know, I try to do my best, kind of posting some behind the scenes images and whatnot. But I'll definitely throw a link up to this for sure. And but yeah, anybody can reach out. I love collaborating with all kinds of folks and expanding the film family.
Exactly. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. And of course, your picture on our website will link it to one of your sites so they can contact you through that. That's Derek McMahon, actor from LaPorte County, and also doing a lot of projects coming up. And we didn't even touch on your screenwriting things coming up. But anyway, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Year and sharing your art journey and your entire journey.
Thank you so much. I could have talked to you guys I could have pulled a Joe Rogan podcast and talked for 3 hours with you guys. I loved it.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.